So in the new year, we always make different resolutions. You know, I'm going to exercise more. I'm going to eat better. I'm going to get more organized. I'm going to spend more time with my family. And that is very good, you know. But most of us just limit ourselves to these superficial revolutions, you know, resolutions. I'm going to make more money, increase my net worth. I was listening to a talk by Prabodhji, who is a teacher at San Jose, who is now a Swami Bodhatmananda, and some points I thought would be relevant for us to start the new year. So am I just going to limit myself to this? Have I increased my net worth? What is more important is, have I increased my spiritual worth? Am I spiritually more evolved? Am I more loving? Am I more compassionate? Am I more giving? Am I doing more for society? And most of all, have I progressed closer to the truth that is within the self or the consciousness or the God principle or God outside? Either way, am I... In January 1, 2013, I was here, and December 31st, have I evolved spiritually or not? That is what, as spiritual seekers, we need to look at. And if I have, that's good. What am I going to do in this coming year? How am I going to? Because ultimately, the goal of all human beings is to evolve to that truth. Within and without the consciousness or God or Father in heaven or whatever you want to call it. The Father in heaven is also the consciousness within us and within all of us. There is only one consciousness that we have different names for. But am I closer to this truth? And if not, how am I going to get there? Is there a roadmap? Is there a plan? Is there some kind of method? And our scriptures have laid it out beautifully for us. And I thought I would summarize this. This talk actually can take 2-3 hours, but we don't have that kind of time. So I'll try to summarize it within the next half hour. It's a very beautiful roadmap that has been created for us by our rishis, the sages of old. It's called Sadhan Chatushtaya. Chatushtaya means four. Sadhan means the four techniques or four methods for spiritual growth. And this is something that we should all memorize, understand, and apply in our life. So the first step is called Vivek, which means discrimination. Discrimination does not mean, as we understand, discrimination between black and white or what they mean by discrimination is the right differentiation or right understanding. And what do we discriminate between? What do we need to define? What is right? What is wrong? What I should do? What I should not do? What is moral? What is immoral? What is ethical? What is unethical? But more important than that, discriminate between what is permanent and what is real. And what is permanent and real, and what is temporary and unreal. Because in this world, everything that we see is temporary, is unreal, it is changing. You know, one day it is like that, next day it is different. One day my husband was like that, tomorrow he's different. One day my body was young, and then now it is not. So everything is changing. And we get so focused on the changing that we get lost. We get disappointed when things don't remain the same as they were. People change, situations change, my health changes. And so we are constantly caught up in this changing world. But what the rishis tell us, that hold on to the changeless. Hold on to that which always was, is, and will be. And that is you. That is, I think somebody is outside. That is me as the higher self. They always distinguish between the the true self, the higher self, called the consciousness or Om, and the changing world. My body is changing, my mind is changing, my ideas are changing, the objects, emotions, and thoughts, everything is changing. So focus on your permanent self, because we all are in reality that permanent entity who is at this moment functioning in this changing world. So you have to, of course, deal with the world. You cannot give up working in the world, but always remember and pay attention. And the more you are tuned to your higher self, the closer you are to that truth, and the less the world of change will bother you less. Because if I am, the example they give is, either you hold on, if there is an ocean, do you hold on to the log of wood that is going up and down, or do you hold on to the lighthouse? Now, the log of wood will go up and down, and you'll be going up and down, and you might be drowning. But if you are standing on the lighthouse, and you become one with the lighthouse, then the world of waves can hit all they want. But the lighthouse not only is permanent, but also becomes a source of guidance. It guides ships safely to the sea. The lighthouse is like the saint or the prophet or Jesus. So discriminate between what is right and what is wrong, what is permanent and what is temporary, and focus on the permanent. What was there when I was a child, and then I became a young girl, and then a youth, and then, all these years that have gone by, there is one entity that is permanent, and that is me, and that is what we always suggest. And with that, what happens is you develop a dispassion called Vairagya, where slowly you realize that the work and the world and all, yes, I need it, but it's not my permanent goal. So you develop a healthy dispassion, people, or detachment. People think as, oh, this person then has to run away from the world and put on orange clothes or put on a white habit and go into a monastery or a church. We don't mean that. What we mean is that you develop a healthy relationship where the world does not become the overwhelming, most important thing. You work, but you have a right healthy adjustment, a proper contact is what they call a healthy contact with the world. You work, but your work in the world becomes secondary to your spiritual journey. But what we do is that we say that, does that mean I should not work? No. Every work that you have been assigned, every place that you have been placed in, has take that as an instrument for me to evolve, a place for me to get better. So whatever situation I am in, accept that as, oh Lord, I am happy where I am, and let me use that. But people always complain, I wish, it was this, I wish it was not that. There's a very beautiful story. It's kind of a long story. May not have time to complete the talk, but it's a very beautiful story. So there was this couple. The man worked in construction, and he always came home, I am so tired, I am so exhausted. And then if his wife would say, I had a hard day with the kids, he said, what do you do? You don't do anything. You just get up in the morning and send the kids to school. Then you watch the soaps and, and then you take a nap, and then you complain, you should work in construction. How I wish I was a woman and I didn't have to do anything all day. So she said, do you want to switch? So he said, yeah, I'd love it. So they both prayed ardently to God. He said, I want to become a woman. And she said, okay, and I want to become a man. So it so happened they were very spiritual people. So God appears and says, you want to be a woman? Okay. For the next 24 hours, to starting tomorrow morning, tells the man, you'll be a woman. Tells the woman, you'll be a man. You go to work and you stay home. He's very happy. So he gets up at 6 in the morning, and soon as he gets up, she has to get the kids, breakfast ready, and, the man's breakfast ready, because he has to be at work at 7, so she's preparing breakfast, and then waking up the kids, and there are 3 of them, getting them ready for school, and getting their clothes, and packing their lunch for them, and packing the man's lunch, and as the boy is leaving, he gets sick and throws up his clothes, so she has to quickly change, take off the clothes, walk, clean them up, put on new clothes, leave the dirty clothes, barely rushes, makes it to school, goes to school and then drops the kids, three kids in three different schools, comes back, and then she has to clean up all the breakfast and then all the clothes, and then they are dirty, you know. So she said, okay, let me as well do the laundry. So she does the laundry and, you know, cleans up the house and settles, and by that time it's, you know, almost lunchtime. So she, you know, fixes herself some lunch, and then she says, you know, the clothes need to be ironed, so she starts ironing them. And by then, you know, she's tired, so she says, you know, let me take a nap. I have been working since 6. The moment she lays down, the bell rings. It is the mailman. He has a package to be signed. Then she signs it, again lays down, and it's now the pest control guy. He needs to spray the house. So she says, forget it. You know, I can't sleep. So she gets the house sprayed. By that time, it's time to pick up the kids. She goes to school, picks up the kids, and now she has to take them to after-school activities and tennis, and, you know, one is in football and one is in piano, and she's sitting in the hot sun, you know, the kid who is practicing piano and sweating and everything. Finally, all of them finish their activities, brings them home, then she has to get their homework done, who sits with them. In the meantime, dinner has to be made, so she's trying to balance all that. And husband comes home, I've had a busy day, I'm so tired. So he sits down, has dinner, and then he puts his feet up and watches TV. Why? Because he had a hard day. He has a beer and his TV. And she has to pick up the dinner dishes and, you know, clean the house and put the children to bed and change them and give them a bath. And finally, she's exhausted about 9, 10 o'clock. She's about ready to fall asleep, and the husband comes into the bed. And he wants her to do her wifely duties. And even though she's exhausted, you know, she says, okay. So, you know, by the time she goes to bed, it's 11, 12 o'clock. And then, you know, alarm, she barely gone to bed, and 6 o'clock, the alarm rings. And again, it's time to get to work. She says, oh, God, thank God. I'm glad I'm not going to be a woman anymore. I didn't realize how tough it is. I'm glad I'm going to be a man again. God said, sorry, you have to wait 9 months. You got pregnant last night. You'll have to carry the baby and and deliver. So, you know, we don't understand. Whatever work you have been given, you know, do it as the God's work. Do it as service. And develop a healthy relationship with your work. So that is called dispassion. Then there are these 6 values which have been placed as all together called Shat Sampatti. Sampatti means wealth. And so there are these 6 values which we all need to practice in our spiritual journey. Without these values, you cannot purify your mind. And unless your mind is pure, if your mind is impure, has all these negative qualities, you can, no matter how much meditation you may do, no matter how many books you may read, that's what we say, to develop discrimination, you have to read good books, you have to contact with saints, you go on pilgrimages. Those are all good ways to develop right understanding. But unless your mind is purified of all the negativities, no amount of prayers, no amount of pilgrimages, you may spend, you know, years in the monastery, but unless you develop these 6 values, you cannot evolve spiritually. So these are very, very important. And we'll just list them. We're not going to spend too much time on them. But one of them is control of the mind and control of the senses. What we find is that our senses are all the time running out into the world, seeing and wanting and acquiring and possessing. And with my hands, I want to get things. With my feet, I want to reach places. I want to see things. I want to hear. I want to speak. I want to touch. I acquire. So the mind is all the time running out through the senses. And a lot of times people will say, I'm going to fast, you know, or I'm going to watch my diet, or I'm going to control my senses. I'm not going to hear. I'm not going to see. I waste too much time in useless talking. So you may control the senses, but unless you control the mind is the called the king of the senses, or the powerhouse, or the control. And unless you control the running of the mind which is all the time running out, wanting, thinking, even if you are not seeing something, but if you're like you may be at this moment here, but suppose your mind is thinking of ice cream or pizza or jewelry or clothes or, you know, whatever, that my new car, then your mind, even if you are not with the object, but your mind will run out and your attention. So they say control the mind and control your senses and train the mind to focus where you want it to. I need to focus on my studies. I need to focus on, I'm sitting in church, I should be thinking about the Lord instead of, you know, looking at what the other person is wearing or what she is doing or what, you know. So the mind should be trained to direct it towards the higher. Instead of letting it run out into the world, train the mind to run on higher. And as you do that, slowly, what happens is you develop a withdrawal where I am no longer, that's not my main purpose in life. My main goal is not just to earn a living, but my main goal is, so I slowly withdraw from what is unimportant. It does not mean I stop working, but I find that where previously I used to spend my whole 24 hours, but now I look for opportunities where I have an hour in the evening. I can spend it for my studies or for my prayers or for my meditation or maybe out in service. So slowly I spend more and more time in spiritual pursuits. You know, I read something at night before I go to bed instead of watching TV. You know, I read. So I wake up a little early in the morning so I can do my exercise. I can do my meditation. So I slowly withdraw and change the direction of my life, right, from running outward to start moving inward. And then for a spiritual seeker, titiksha or forbearance is a very, very important value, very important quality. Because in life, things never run smoothly, no matter. You may be the king of England, you may be the prime minister. In fact, they have more problems in life than you and I do. But you may be Rockefeller, you may be, you know, Bill Gates. No matter where you are, what position you are in, life always will throw arrows at you, will throw curveballs. You know, nothing will be going straight. And a wise person understands that that is the nature of this body. The body is going to be problems. The mind is going to give me problems. People are going to give me problems. But he develops, or she develops, a forbearance. Yes, O Lord, whatever is happening is as a result of my past actions, my karma. And this whole world is just a play. He sees this whole world as just a game where I am also playing. And so she will participate in the world according to the rules of the world, but like a game, not too much involved. You know, in a game, if you win or lose, especially, you know, I mean, if we, you know, some people, of course, get so serious. But if you play the game like a game, it's okay. You know, if I won, that's good. If I didn't win, you know, like that. So similarly, he sees the world as a game and plays by the rules, but understands that not every time I can win. And I may win, I may lose, but the ability to cheerfully bear the worldly changes, physical, mental, intellectual, and world, whatever happens in among people. He or she observed, okay, this person has changed, the situation has changed, the president has changed, you know, Democrats or Republicans, instead of getting all worked up, it's okay. You know, that's the nature of the world. Faith is a very, very important instrument that we use in our journey, because unless you have faith in God, unless you have faith in the scriptures, faith in the guru, and then most important, faith in yourself, that if all these great masters could walk the path and reach, if Jesus could do it, Buddha could do it, Shankaracharya could do it, I can do it too. So having faith in oneself and total, complete faith in the scriptures and in the God and in the guru, Faith does not mean you blindly just follow anything and everything, but an intelligent understanding that whatever has been written for my good, whatever I have been taught. So developing a faith and then courage that I can also do it. So that together, that happens, that helps a person on their spiritual journey. And then the sixth value is called samadhan, which means firm abidance. Once you are firmly abided in your knowledge, in your truth, that this is what I have been told, once you clearly understand it, then you abide, then you make that part of your life, that this is how I'm going to live my life. And then such a person develops a balance where, you know, things do not easily sway this person from their goal because they are firm in their belief. And you look at Jesus, how much problems he faced from the Roman Empire. Look at Buddha's life. Look at all the great saints and sages, how many problems they had. They were so firm in their faith in God and in their faith in themselves that no matter what kind of problems the world threw at them, they never lost that. So that firm abidance comes from faith. So all of these work together. You know, you get the right knowledge, you develop detachment, and then as you develop these six qualities, control of mind, control of the senses, you slowly withdraw from worldly attachments. World may throw you problems, but because of your faith in God, you develop forbearance. And having understood, then you do not sway from the path. Once you have this, then you are ready for liberation. That this is the, even though it's the last, but in my mind it's the most important quality, that I would want to be liberated. Liberated does not mean that I want to leave this world, but I do not want to be dependent on the world for anything. I am fine the way I am, and I am, and then such a person totally becomes one with God. So liberation is what? Freedom from worldly problems and total dependence on God, total holding on to the Lord's feet and becoming one. And such a person is truly liberated. Otherwise, most of us, if we believe in rebirth, which we do, that through life after life, you will be born and then you will die again and then born and die again and go through, you know, 9 months in the mother's womb and then toilet training and ABCs and all that. But true liberation happens when you become one with your spiritual essence. And that's what we learn in meditation. That's what our goal is. So that liberation, but it should be an intense desire for liberation. Most of us, first of all, we don't even think about there's anything called liberation because we are so happy in the world. Yeah, the world is giving me problems, but it's okay. At least, you know, I get some iotas of joy. Then slowly this person develops what is called as a mild mumukshutva, manda, where slowly he starts thinking, yeah, there is something called God. You know, well, let me find out what it is. So he maybe goes to church or goes to a teacher and reads a little bit. And then slowly the desire becomes more intense. So from mild, it becomes moderate. Where, okay, now this person is serious about their studies and serious about their spirituality. And most of us, at least I think, are either in the mild or maybe inching towards moderate. But unless you have an intense desire, like Buddha. Buddha had the palace. He was going to be the king. He had a beautiful wife. He had a beautiful young child, you know. But he said, no, I want freedom from misery, you know, because his charioteer told him that you are going to get old, you're going to get sick, and you're going to die. And he said, I don't want any of those. I don't want to get old. I don't want to get sick, and I don't want to die. Is there another way out? And so he just left his palace and walked away in the middle of the night. people might say, well, he abandoned his kingdom and he abandoned his wife and child and all, but he actually didn't abandon them. He left them in the care of the king and they were well taken care of. And later on, when he became a realized monk, he came back and they actually joined his wife and son joined his monastery. But by his leaving that kingdom, billions of Buddhists in the last 2,500 years have benefited from that. So that kind of intense desire for liberation, we don't necessarily have to leave our house or go to the forest or the monastery. But wherever I am, if my every activity should become a spiritual journey, should become a spiritual effort, I should be constantly thinking that, are these activities are helping me spiritually or not? Am I growing? Am I evolving? And that should become the number one pursuit. And the desire should be so intense that nothing else matters. And when that happens, then all of this will fall into place. So this new year, maybe we can all resolve that let us practice these steps. I have heard about that. I have spoken about it. But I don't think I have all of these. I have very few and I wish I had more. But we all need to do that. And the more we do it, the closer we are. And so hopefully when we, on December 31st, 2014, when we look at these points, we can say, yes, okay, this one I progressed, this one I did. Not so much, you know, like that. And hopefully it's a wonderful topic. I mean, we can talk a lot more, but I tried just briefly to summarize. This is actually the entire essence of spirituality. There is nothing more, actually. Once you have understood this, there is nothing more you need. Then your goal is very clear. It's a, you know, beautiful roadmap that the rishis have laid out for us. We just have to follow it. It's very simple. Any questions? Any comments?
Little by little. Now I still go shopping and look, but I don't buy stuff. So,
that's good.
There's a shift, but I'm still out there looking.
Yeah, no, doesn't mean you don't buy. I mean, you buy gifts for people and Christmas and birthday and anniversary and all. But you're not just uselessly just going to the mall and, you know, just wasting your time and buying things you don't need just because they are on sale and things like that. So I think once you make it that this is my goal, spirituality, then everything else comes. Then you automatically go and study, you develop this passion. I think they're all connected. Everything is connected. But
right.
But even to go leave everything and go live in a cave is not easy. Suppose I were to tell you, would you be able to do it? It's not easy.
No.
And these people give up very good, like Swamiji's and all, give up top paying jobs. And, you know, they basically own nothing. What is their net worth? Zero. When you think about the world, they don't own anything. And to give up a job and career and wife, I mean, or not wife, but brothers and sisters and parents and family and all that, and to just go and live in the mission is not easy. And then to go through the discipline of studying and teaching, it's actually hard. Yeah, 24-hour, yeah, and then to be all the time learning and teaching and make your talks interesting, it's not that easy. Being a monk, people think it is, but and depending on others to feed you, somebody forgets to bring your lunch, it sometimes happens to them. Somebody was supposed to bring lunch and forgot or got caught up in traffic, and so you're waiting because you have no food, because you haven't prepared. You know, some of them don't cook, so it's actually not that easy. The job is tough, and then you know, problems of the center and financial, and you know, people are having fights with the board members. They come to them for, you know, refereeing and all. It's they go through a lot.
Step, I'm wondering,
there's
a whole lot
that mm-hmm. before even being true. Yeah, but there is an intrinsic force that guides us. Just as the river is just automatically goes towards the ocean. So the Lord within us does pull us, does call to us, call out to us. But the problem is we don't listen because we are so blinded with the world outside that we don't listen to the inner call. And then the guru or the scriptures again remind you of that. But the ones who do, then they are the ones who progress. And that's what they say, listen to your inner voice. That is pulling you. The Lord is pulling. In fact, sometimes when you get sorrows, it is meant to remind you that don't depend too much on the world, depend on me. Right. You want to say something? True. Yeah. But then you won't know what liberation is unless you have the knowledge, unless you have met a teacher. So I think it all goes hand in hand. That's why they have placed it first. Because the desire for liberation would come if you know that something is not okay. But now what is it that I'm looking for, like she said? That's when you need to go to a teacher. So yeah, the desire has to be first. But then the knowledge comes later. Or some people just go for knowledge. Or let's go and see what he's saying. And then later on the other things come. So. Well, the 32 values are kind of different qualities that I should develop. You know, ahimsa, shanti, arjavam, straightforwardness, humility, nonviolence. So those are all methods to reach this goal. Those are subdivisions, you know, that to develop a spiritual seeker must have. Must have humility, must have straightforwardness, must have humility, must have respect for the teacher, must have, you know, compassion to all, you know, so patience, all those things. So those are sub-qualities that one needs to develop. This is the broad outline of the entire spiritual journey. This is the entire spiritual journey. Well, those are subdivisions within these. Probably within these six. Within those six. But these four, the one, two, and four are, you know, very important. And then this is the technique that helps us in our spiritual journey. But first I have to decide what is right, what is my goal. I have to detach, develop healthy dispassion, and then I have to intense desire for liberation from the world and hold on. And this helps me in my journey, these six. The six are like the boat that I use on my journey. And those 32 values in the 13th chapter are further subdivisions of this. You can say.
So you work on the 32?
Yeah, actually all of them happen together. What Swami Tejomayananda ji says, he says, just pick up one. And I'm going to, like Mahatma Gandhi, he said, I'm going to practice nonviolence, you know, or I'm going to practice truth. And you pick up one and practice it 100% and everything will come with it. You just say, I'm going to practice truth and everything will come with it. Control of the mind, control of the senses, you know, because in your pursuit of the truth, you'll have problems and you'll have diversions and you'll have distractions. So they say you just pick up one value and just say, I'm going to practice it 100%, everything will come. Humility, you just start practicing humility. You start practicing straightforwardness. You know, I'm just listing some of those 32 values in the 13th chapter. But the point is that any of them, if adopted fully, will reach to the goal. But what this is basically does is give us a mental lifeline or a goal to follow. And that this is what I need to do with my life. Somebody has done the work for us. We don't have to. But yeah, no, I think in different chapters, in different places, what happens is that the knowledge is the same, but unless you hear it again and again, it doesn't register. Like how many times we have heard that I am that. But it still doesn't register. I still don't think I am that. I still think I'm Anil, a doctor, and you know, teacher. All those little hats I'm wearing, those little adjectives I have. But I am that, it only comes in flashes, you know. This morning, for a second, I, you know, had that, you know, very brief, where I felt naked, that there was nothing else, you know, but only for a split second, and then it disappears. So for it to become permanent, where it says samadhan, firm abidance, doesn't happen. It takes a lot of repeated listening, repeated contact with, you know, like-minded people. That's called satsang, the company of good. Listening to teachers, reading, meditating, practicing, applying in your life, in your work. Which one? Where is that? Which one? Yeah, different places in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, they have covered these values. And oh, you're talking about the devotee, the qualities of a devotee in the 12th chapter, where he says, you know, these are the qualities of a true devotee: advaishta sarva bhuta nam maitra karuna evacha. So he says, Krishna says, who is my true devotee who does not hate anybody, who loves all, who remains balanced? Yeah, the same thing is again and again repeated and expounded, enlarged, put in different words and different contexts, but it's all the same. Those 20 are in the 12th chapter, where he talks about the qualities of a devotee. You know, my devotee, the Lord says, who is my devotee? One who has these particular qualities is dear to me.